You're sick of the media. I get it. We are too. Granted, we're sort of media adjacent, but we talk about the young members of Congress under the age of 45 while having cocktails. And therefore, our applications for press credentials continue to be denied. And you know what? We're just fine with that because we got a party to throw. Here we go, gang.
Welcome to Political Playlist.
All right. Are we ready, guys?
Happy hour.
Happy hour.
You fucked that up so bad.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to Political Playlist Happy Hour. I'm Michael Kristoff.
I'm Anna Muskie-Goldman.
I'm Anthony Barkett.
Ooh. And I have a Negroni in hand and a dating app story that is going to send Anna spinning out of the Zoom call.
Yes.
So some of you, I'm sure many of you have heard of the dating app Raya. Mm-hmm. Anna, do you want to just give us a quick snapshot of what that is?
Yeah, it's like an exclusive, it's like an invite only dating app for douchey people.
And C-list and D-list celebrities. Correct.
So it thrives.
So I'm a real catch on said application. And so I matched with this girl and we started some initial texting through the app. And I made a Caitlin Clark reference. And it was sort of a funny reference. I was like, hey, should we celebrate Caitlin Clark's number one pick with martinis?
Oh my God, I'm so nervous where this story is
and
going.
I would have blocked you.
So she writes back, who's Caitlin Clark?
I hope you stop talking to her.
With like several of the, you know, the wide-eyed emojis, like, who's Caitlin Clark?
What? Like, what did this girl, where did she, like, where did this person live? Yeah. What did they do for a living?
She's a New York, Venice, bi-coastal elite. And
so,
like, what does it, so I replied, well, I'm told by my liberal female friends she's the future of women's sports.
That's a good answer. Okay.
So I thought that was a great answer. And I don't think she was kidding, but maybe she was. I mean, who?
Wait, did she respond?
I haven't checked yet. This was like all happened
last
night.
Check right now.
Well, this is what I don't.
I need to know.
Yeah. Who does not, whether or not you like women's sports, not know who Caitlin Clark is? Like, I mean, she's already been on SNL, for Christ's sake. Like,
yeah. Wait, what'd she say?
Well, while Michael's checking for that, I still have not been accepted to Raya.
No way.
Although I've had 25 people recommend.
Guys, she has not responded.
Wow. So either she feels like an idiot or she's like this. The fact that you said liberal female friends was a red flag to her.
The fact that you watch women's sports.
Honestly, Michael, that's the most attractive thing about you.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much.
Please do not follow Anna's advice.
Yeah. That's a big turnoff. Okay.
Don't you want to date someone exactly like me?
Silence.
Well, the news this week.
Yes.
So there's a lot going on in the news, folks.
Here's my thing with sports too, though, is I feel like anyone can relate to it. Like if you actually don't like sports, I'm not a huge sports buff, but like when I go, I'm like, who owns the stadium? Who's the family?
Have a daughter?
That's great.
Do they have a daughter?
Is she a billionaire?
You know, like, hey, maybe if you were
there's
a girl,
so much to relate
like,
to when it
you're
comes
like, to he's sports. Dating so-and-so. Oh, there's a show on all the women wives. Yeah. And supposedly one of them's making out with so-and-so.
Anthony's right? Literally like, this is like Real Housewives.
But to your point, there's something interesting to find about it.
Yes.
Yeah. Totally. Yeah.
Okay, guys, speaking of interesting, let me just run through a couple of things that have happened this week. Nothing major. The first criminal trial on a former president has begun, and he has already taken a nap during said trial. The Senate has ended impeachment of our Homeland Security Secretary as quickly as it began. The House Speaker is on thin ice and finally going to maybe pass Ukrainian aid. And the USC valedictorian speaker has already been canceled before she even took the podium.
That was pretty wild.
Guys, should we like make a drinking game out of this?
Yeah. The USC thing was like really crazy to me. It felt very extreme. Like there's plenty of ways to make sure there's not like interruption other than literally silencing the smartest person in your school.
Also, I should add that Iran sent 300 plus missiles into Israel
over
the weekend.
That happened.
But I digress. Guys, did I miss anything? Anything fun happened?
A quick elaboration on the Trump trial.
Yeah.
I just wanted to read through a list I read this morning of the jurors that have so far been selected.
Oh, yes, seven of the 18.
Yes. So there's someone who is a foreman who works in sales and lives in Harlem, but is originally from Ireland, a native New Yorker who's an oncology nurse, a corporate lawyer from Oregon, a self-employed IT consultant who lives on the Lower East Side but grew up in Puerto Rico, a software engineer who works for Disney, a lawyer who lives on the Upper East Side, and this is my favorite one, a teacher and lifelong New Yorker. She was the only juror in the box who said that she didn't know Trump was charged in three other cases.
Oh, wow. Bingo. Ladies and gentlemen, these are our peers.
Yeah. I mean, it must be hard, right? Like, I don't know. That it's hard to find impartial people on Trump, you know, in our world, I think.
It's interesting, though, because I saw Jeffrey Toobin, who we all might know from that Zoom call. He was on CNN, like, making a very good comment this week, being like, look, everyone who watches cable news and is in the sort of political know thinks that these stories are stories that so many people are knowing about. Mm. But the reality is that most people aren't following these stories. Right. And, you know, more power to them if they're able
they
to
have other shit
out
to worry about.
Yeah. But I think it's his point was saying, like, you'd be surprised at how many potential jurors are actually not going to really come with a lot of pre-baked information about the case. Like, yes, everyone's going to like have an idea of Trump or what they think of Trump. But like, as far as the elements of the case and other things go, his comment was sort of speaking directly to this juror that you
interesting.
Anthony, did you read a newspaper this week?
I did. Oh. I would actually like to talk about the USC thing.
Yeah.
Oh,
what do you think?
Yeah.
Right. Probably controversial, but I actually think USC is making a smart decision here. Namely because, I mean,
Wait, before we go on, can one of you give just quick background in case people don't know what's going on?
So she was picked as valedictorian, for starters. She's supposed to give a speech at graduation, and she's Palestinian. And she's actually been pretty pro-Palestinian on social media, and she's put links and written about, I'm trying to put this in the right words, but about saying that Israel should not be a state, like it should, you know, no longer be there type things. And she linked to pretty radical articles, news articles as well. So because of that is why the administration decided for her not to be speaking at graduation.
CNN reported that she was accused, the Trojans for Israel accused, her name is Asna Tabassum, and the Trojans for Israel accused her of sharing a link in the bio of her Instagram page that calls Zionism a racist settler colonial ideology and advocates for the complete abolishment of Israel.
Right. You know, she
said that
on...
she posted the link, which the link details, as in her words, what's happening in Palestine and how to help. And it was 3 years ago as part of her commitment to stand up for human rights.
You know, and I think to echo that, she, you know, has one of the you know, polarized or one of the flashpoint phrases is this, you know, from the river to the sea, you know, is this idea of like wiping out Israel. And she was on CNN last night. I saw another interview where she was interviewed by Abby Phillips. And Abby Phillips asked her very pointedly.
It's Abby Phillip. There's no Phillip. S in her name.
Oh, she's not part of the Phillips television air conglomerate?
All right,
darn.
Go on.
So, you know, Abby Phillip had asked her, you know, do you advocate for the destruction of Israel and Jews? And, you know, this is what I think my continuing growing problem is with these otherwise very important pro-Palestine voices, which are they cannot answer these questions. They cannot answer. She didn't give an answer. She said, well, what I'm saying is that we should stand up for, you know, and it's just this obfuscating and talking in circles. And to Abby Phillips' credit, she sort of tried to drill her down on this. And she said, well, I want to abolish Israel, not the people. So, you know, the problem is that I think a lot of these it seems, and again, I could be wrong here, but it seems like the more somebody like her who has this voice and has this platform goes on to a national news program and cannot answer the simple question of, do you want to get rid of Jews and Israel, tells me that she does want to get rid of Jews and Israel. And so to me, it completely undermines any and all good that her case and platform may be trying to make, with the very fundamental element that she absolutely wants to get rid of Jews and Israel.
Can I ask a question that I wonder if, like, Arab Americans or people supporting, you know, the movement to quote unquote free Palestine might ask, which is, if this was a Jewish student who had been posting support for freeing the hostages, who had been posting support for, you know, fighting against the terrorism attack and Israel's rights to defend itself, would the same thing have happened?
So I don't think so.
If they were the valedictorian at USC.
I don't think so. And by the way, Anthony, I 100% agree that I think this was the right decision by USC. Because I think that, and again—
But why is that different? And I'm just, because like, honestly, I think that it's an important conversation to have, but why is that different than a Jewish valedictorian saying things in support of Israel that are the subtext of which is violent towards Palestinians?
Because it's the subtext, not the outright saying of it, right? So if you're saying Israel was attacked, Israel has the right to defend itself, et cetera, et cetera, you're saying, hey, we're in defense. You're not calling for the destruction of Gaza. You're saying, hey, we're trying
Israel is calling for the destruction of Gaza. So
no,
they don't want
not.
A two-state solution. They want to have all of it. So,
well, that's not correct.
That's what Netanyahu does not want, a two-state solution.
He has flip-flopped on this issue. And
But historically they have perpetrated violence in Gaza and the West Bank. So I think someone could say that if someone is saying Israel has a right to defend itself and is speaking in support of Israel as a state, not in support of Jewish people, but as Israel as a state, I think that person, I agree with you, would still be allowed to be valedictorian, but under sort of the rules which are being laid out, they shouldn't be.
I think there's a major difference between somebody who is calling for the destruction of something else versus the protection or preservation of their thing. And granted, I absolutely agree that, you know, the subtext there is that, okay, it seems like Israel is just indiscriminately bombing these innocent people. And that, you know, if you were calling for, if this said, you know, hypothetical here was the person saying, yes, let's level Gaza, you know, that's a completely different animal in my view. But if they're saying, hey, we're trying to defend ourselves versus this person who is actively, you know, calling for the destruction of a state, you know, I think that's where the line seems to be being drawn, in my view.
Yeah.
I mean, I think there's two issues here. One, I truly don't believe there's a freedom of speech anymore in the country and even in the world. And mainly because of what people put on social media. And unfortunately, like, people's words are going to have consequences. So if you want to be out there and be a public spokesperson and say what you want on any topic, be prepared for people to say, you know what? I don't want you to come to my party. And so that's the number one issue here. So I think it goes for both ways. I'm not saying that USC would have not allowed a pro-Israel person not to speak. But the other thing is, USC has a school, or the Shoah Foundation, basically dedicated to Holocaust survivors.
Right.
It's a major foundation at USC that was started in 1992.
And it's incredible, by the way.
Yeah. And let's face this, you are in LA.
Yeah, well, that's but I think that's, to me, where the conversation derails and becomes illegitimate, because look, I have Jewish ancestors. I like, and I'm not trying to take a side. I just think it's important to like present, like now what you're saying has gone from her words and what she's at fault for, which I completely understand. And I think to your point, like someone in that position should be ready to be, you know, under fire. And it does not seem like she's handled herself very well since this happened. But then to bring it then to like, the USC has a foundation, there are Jewish donors, you're in Los Angeles where there's a very powerful Jewish community, then you're kind of getting into A, tropes that promote anti-Semitism, actually, and also getting into a sense of, I think you're like, you're giving fire to the argument that like, oh, it's because the Jews are in, there are Jewish people in power in Los Angeles at USC that are making sure this is happening, which I think is what the side defending her is arguing.
Newsflash, the world is run by wealthy people, wealthy boards.
And I don't disagree with you. I don't disagree with you.
I actually think USC is going to be skipped, or like what they did was smart, because they're preventing what they think could be a major issue, which is this woman getting up and talking about Palestine during her whole valedictorian speech. Regardless if it's, you know, read before or, you know, looked at before or not.
Right. That was another thing. Abby Phillip asked her, were you planning to speak about Palestine? And she didn't answer that question either.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, there's no,
I mean, I think you're right.
Of course she is.
I think you're right, Anthony. Like, I do think you look at, like, you know, there was a hearing with this woman from Columbia, because there's been all these like counter protests at Columbia. Some students have been suspended. Some have been arrested. And Congress is now, you know, holding hearings to get clarification on that. And I think, I don't know what I agree with, honestly. Like, I really feel like there are arguments on both sides of this. But I do think that coming from like the school's perspective, the thing that I do understand, however cynical it may be, is that the school is protecting itself, to your point. And they're basically betting on, okay, if this happens, we're going to get backlash, but it's going to be one quick news cycle and then it'll be over. Whereas if she had spoken, even if she had given a speech that was, you know, not controversial, her presence would have been controversial to many, obviously. And that would have sparked protests, which would have sparked counter protests. And who knows like how that ball can spiral. So I think that that's a really good point.
I think the USC president also just avoided being hauled in front of Elise Stefanik's committee in Congress. Sure. So. Yeah. She saved herself a trip to DC, if nothing else. All right, guys. Who's got a fun tweet who wants to kick things off?
I'll go.
Okay, Anthony. Anthony, go first. Then you guys don't say anything, so I jump in. I'm uncomfortable with silence.
Yeah, me too.
Well, good luck in marriage.
So the Senate should do our job. So I'm giving it away right there. And conduct a thorough and transparent impeachment trial. A secretary, I can never pronounce Mayorkas.
Alejandro Mayorkas.
The American people deserve better than the Biden administration and Senate Democrats trying to sweep their border crisis under the rug.
Oh, all right. So somebody.
Josh Hawley. Katie Britt.
Oh, wow.
There's only so many Senate Republicans.
So honestly, the reason.
Did you say Senate? I missed that.
Yeah, it was in the tweet.
Wow.
So the reason I'm picking this is like, I do think our country's going, or our politicians are going in a terrible direction here. Like, once again, the Speaker of the House might be voted out, right? We've gone through all this stuff, and I just started looking into it because I'm like, how many of these guys have actually been impeached before?
Right.
And this is the first time in 100 years
a
cabinet member is being impeached. Now, let me tell you why the House Committee on Homeland Security is doing this. They said that he has breached the public trust by violating his statutory duty to control the border and knowingly making false statements to Congress. Under oath, he claimed to have operational control over the border as defined by the Secure Fence Act, only to later say that he never made such a claim. Now, once again, the last time this happened 150 years ago, a cabinet member was being accused of bribery. So it was for personal gain, right? Not actually having authority over your job here. And there's no crime, no misdemeanor to warrant this impeachment. And to me, it's basically a policy agreement.
Right. If they don't like his policy.
Disagreement. Yes. Yeah. I am like fully in the camp of the Democrats on this, because let's just play out this scenario. They impeach him. Great. We have no one in charge now. So then Biden's going to have to go through this process of getting someone approved. Right. So then how long is that going to take? Is this Senate, you know, and then eventually when this person gets approved, what the fuck do you think they're going to do when they get in? Politicians, you can actually be doing something at the border right now. And instead we're doing these silly impeachment cases. And I agree, almost a little similar to Trump, the whole Biden stuff. I think this is all dumb and a mess. Like, you guys are not doing anything for the country at this point. So my question, well, all right. And last bit of information, it happened today and it went to the Senate, and basically the Senate dismissed along party lines, 51 to 49, to dismiss these claims. Mm-hmm. You know, like, so one, I'm curious as to how you guys look at this situation. Do you think this is going to cause bigger implications in a next cabinet position?
I don't think so. I think that honestly, it's just like a way to give congressional Republicans a talking point for their reelection campaign, which is so stupid.
I agree. It's kind of like the, we got,
it's like he's the boogeyman,
you know?
Right? It's like they can now go and be like, we did our best to try to, you know, cut him out from the very top because he's doing a bad job, but Democrats blocked our attempt to fix, they blocked our attempt to fix the border, which like is not what this would have done, to your point, Anthony. It would have made it worse. But yeah, it's a policy disagreement. Like, get over it. That's why you are in government, to have those and solve those. I think it's the same thing. Like, we've talked before about executive orders. We've now gotten into a situation where like executive orders are basically the only ways that presidents can really assert power over any hot button issue, because no one from the other side ever wants to support them. And very rarely do we have White House and Congress fully aligned. So I think it's like all of these tools that were meant as a like a last resort when our country was founded are suddenly becoming just like willy-nilly, whether it's executive orders to a greater degree or impeachment, you know, increasingly now. It just feels like we're diminishing the power that these things are meant to have.
Correct. It's Anthony, your question is a good one. And I think it sadly has now become the political norm, right? We have never been as divided as we are as a country and as a governing body as well. And so these are, you know, in such a closely divided government, you end up resorting to these extreme last resort tools as a means to do anything, right? And you're seeing it play out with Marjorie Taylor Greene threatening, you know, to oust Speaker Johnson, et cetera, et cetera. But something that I think is germane to the issue here, which is immigration. And I think there's a very good case to be made, which says that the Biden administration has not successfully handled this issue. Mm-hmm. And obviously, we've spoken about abortion being a colossal galvanizing voter issue. And I, you know, we've talked about how these are the two things that are lining up for to determine the election, or at least these are the strongest things that the right and the left have as we head into November. And I heard a really interesting pundit talking today, and he said, and I don't want to just sort of get it right, he's like an established strategist and pollster. And he goes, given how much is happening in our country and our world on a week-to-week basis, this election is going to be determined by events that have not happened yet.
Mm-hmm. That's
and
great.
Yeah, and it was like, it was one of those like, holy shit moments as I was listening to this, because it's so true, right? And whether it's going to be, you know, some seismic thing like what's happening in Arizona on abortion, or whether it's going to be some seismic incident at the border, or some seismic incident in the Middle East or wherever, that like, it seems to me, and going back to this Trump juror, right, who doesn't know about the other cases, it's going to be the thing that happens in October, that totally like spins people right in the moment. And I think that, you know, this sort of stuff, like the Mayorkas impeachment, is only just setting the stage for that.
Yeah, I agree. Good point, whoever that pundit was.
Whit Ayers, who's a Republican strategist and pollster. And by the way, if you thought I had the golden pipes, this guy sounds like $1 million on air.
You just claimed to have golden pipes.
No one ever said you had golden
pipes.
Oh, that's not. I'm pretty sure it's in the Yelp reviews here of our podcast. Anyway,
Yelp review.
Moving right along.
Written by myself.
Yeah. Yeah, it says Mikey K from Venice wrote in. Wow, weird. Same initials.
Who's up next?
I have a tweet. Speaking of sort of voters and election and whatnot. All right, here we go. Katie Couric can call Republicans anti-intellectual, but on election night, she'll be crying into her champagne and caviar with all her intellectual friends.
I love Katie Couric, so I'm very against this tweet.
Also, no offense, I crying with your friends with champagne and caviar, not also a bad situation.
Yeah, kind of sounds fine.
Not if I'm going to cry.
Yeah,
let's do it that way.
You should have sent like alone in your closet. Yeah, you know, like, with no friends.
I don't know who has it up for Katie Couric. I kind of feel like this is a woman.
It is a woman.
It feels kind of like woman hate-y. Is it Anna Paulina Luna?
It's not a normal woman hater.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is it Nicole Malliotakis?
No. Let's just say.
I honestly would have gone both of those in.
I know. Those are two very good guesses.
Because I was thinking New York.
Yeah.
I know. It's our go-to Nancy Mace.
Oh, my God.
And
Nancy.
It was surprising to me.
Nancy, have you ever had caviar?
Not yet.
Yeah. By the way, like Nancy's had a real glow up. I'm sure she's like getting some caviar and champagne in there. So.
Yeah. She sent this tweet.
Calling the kettle black.
She sent this tweet from the Trump International on Fifth Avenue. Yeah. So this is in response to set this up a little bit, or rather give context. Katie Couric was on Bill Maher's podcast, and she was saying, she said, socioeconomic disparity, class warfare and resentment and anti-intellectualism is what's driving many of these anti-establishment MAGA voters to support Trump. And so my question is, and we can get into the elements of Nancy Mace, because I think there's a few that are a little bit ironic here, but when did it become bad to be smart, right? How did the right sort of turn being intellectual into this vilification and almost voting galvanization?
Well, this is the first thing I want to say is that I feel like Nancy Mace is misinterpreting this quote from Katie Couric, because I think what Katie Couric is saying is actually—
Or intentionally— You know, spinning.
Maybe, but like it seems like what Katie Couric is saying, actually, a lot of Republicans would agree with, like a lot of sort of base Republican Trump voters would agree with, which is like, we are driven by anti-intellectualism. Like, we don't want our, and this is me speaking as a MAGA lover, like, we don't want our kids educated by these liberal elite institutions. We don't believe that, like, they should be reading books that we don't approve. We don't think that, you know, sending funds overseas is good because we think that America is all that's in the entire world. Like, all those ideas are anti-intellectual ideas that I think Republicans, not trying to stereotype, but like that group of Republicans that I think Katie Couric is referring to, I think they would proudly say that. So it's interesting that Nancy Mace is like getting all up on her high horse, because it sort of feels like she's fighting a fight that Katie Couric is not trying to fight, you know?
Yeah.
I also just like Katie Couric.
Katie Couric can do no wrong. She's amazing.
Yeah.
So,
she also is like a broad appeal person. It's interesting that Nancy Mace would go after her.
Right.
And talking to Bill Maher, who's also a broad appeal person.
And Katie Couric also has way more experience in politics than Nancy Mace.
No, and communication.
Nancy Mace, let's be honest, Nancy Mace went to a very, you know, prestigious, albeit, you know, aggressive military institution, but a higher learning institution.
And lives in Charleston, South Carolina, which is like,
which is like
nice
one of the
city,
biggest growing towns. Yeah. I mean, I think the idea, what I think is so interesting, and this is a very interesting question to ask of like, how much does Nancy Mace know what she's doing here, right, in sort of spinning this? Because it seems to me like, you know, what we're seeing happen in the world or in the country right now, but the world, is this shift from being an industrialized society to a technological society. In other words, these tech jobs are and technology is so rapidly and exponentially replacing what are traditional industrial manual jobs. And the right has taken up this issue as political ammunition. And, you know, they have galvanized and stoked a lot of fear and disenfranchisement among this group of people who feel like, yeah, you know, I'm a non-college educated worker who is being left behind. And those are real issues, right? And I think the problem that I have with all of this is that the solutions to these problems that the right seems to really try and push or at least sell these voters on are issues that are trying to stem the tide, right? It's this sort of looking backwards. And that isn't to say that any or all of the solutions proposed by the left are the right solutions, but they're at least forward thinking. And so when I see a tweet like this from Nancy Mace, to me, it's playing into that of like, she's an elitist pretending to speak to the common man in so many ways. And also, you know, somehow denigrating the idea that like that being intellectual and being smart and being well-read and highly educated is a bad thing. Like, I want to be smarter. Like, I'm a pretty educated guy. I still want to be smarter. There's still a ton I don't know.
You've reached your limit, Mike.
I might have. It's entirely possible.
I would stop trying.
Hey, you know, I want for nothing, but
I think that I have two points to make on this. One, to the point you just made about like sort of fake talking to the common man. I just think that criticism is out the window because, like, look at Trump. It's like any.
Oh, right.
But yeah. I think that it's like we've gone now so far beyond where that's like a reasonable expectation of people that the man with gold toilets is like telling, you know, people
I feel your pain.
They're telling really like do. Steel workers that that he understands their life. But the other point that I wanted to make about Nancy Mace, and I think in general about kind of this like burn on liberals, just to kind of like give, I don't want to give politicians insults fire, but I do understand beyond what you're saying, Michael, about like industrialization and sort of these people feeling left behind. I also do understand the backlash to quote unquote liberal elitism. I think that like liberal people, specifically in cities, specifically on the coasts, can be like really fucking annoying.
Oh, yeah.
And so I think that they have not done themselves any favors. And it's something that I've tried to like, you know, measure.
Speaking as one.
Sometimes, you know, not to out myself, but like, I think.
Oh, that happened on episode 2.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, but it's something that like I've now like
tried
doing,
to work on.
Oh my. Yeah. Okay. Are you being facetious? Or are you
mansplaining?
Being real?
No, I think what she means, Anthony, is that
you're right, Anthony. Like I just didn't want you to be making fun of me.
I wasn't making fun of you. I'm actually saying I think there's some people who are actually being a bit more conscious of it.
Yeah.
And I've joked when I go back to my friends in LA, like they say things. Think you have zero concept of what's going on.
Yeah.
All right. Moving along to my tweet. Are you ready?
Oh, definitely. No. Now I'm not.
It's a little bit broad. Okay. The United States must lead a concerted effort to support the free world and take on those whose entire purpose is to undermine and destabilize our country.
Foreign policy person.
This is a hard one.
Can you do
Republican or Democrat?
It's a Republican.
You do gender and region.
It's a Republican man from the Northeast.
From the Republican man from the Northeast.
Not from Philadelphia or from Cincinnati.
Yeah. It feels like
I've learned.
It feels like a Mike Lawler.
Good job.
Yeah.
Oh, buy a lotto ticket.
Oh my God. Michael's so happy. Okay.
Also, yeah, I'm not setting foot in a bodega.
With the same name.
I'm an intellectual elite. I don't go to bodegas.
So everyone goes to bodega.
What does a lotto cost anyway these days? $10?
Oh my gosh. Okay. So what he's referring to, you mentioned earlier, Michael, that the congressional Republicans, specifically Speaker Johnson, have put forth 3 aid measures and 1/4 measure that is a Republican national security bill. The 3 aid measures are for Israel, Ukraine, and quote unquote allies in the Indo-Pacific, which essentially means Taiwan. And what the 4th measure, which is a national security measure, includes things like seizing Russian assets in the U.S. and creating a loan lease program for Ukraine and putting additional sanctions on Iran. So essentially, Speaker Johnson wants these bills to be voted on individually. Previously, they were all part of one package that had been passed in the Senate because, as we all know, Senate Republicans tend to be a little less divisive on this issue, specifically around Ukraine aid. And Lawler is basically saying, look, I'm not concerned about the process. I'm not concerned about the procedure. I don't really care what happens. He just wants to see that all of this aid passed. This was from an interview that he gave actually on Morning Joe, very liberal morning show. And he made a point where he said his wife is actually from Moldova, which is a border country of Ukraine. Mm-hmm. And he was saying, he's like, you know, she has family that lives there. If Ukraine falls, all these former Soviet states, which are much smaller, have much smaller defense systems and militaries, they will fall as well. And basically, Putin's dream of a revived Soviet Union will become somewhat of a reality. Wow. So,
yeah, this Moldova thing is real.
Don't disagree.
I don't disagree either. And I think it's really short-sighted for anyone who's basically saying like, oh, Ukraine, like we just have to let it go. It's kind of like, it's not just Ukraine. Anyway, one interesting thing he said in this interview is that China is the biggest purchaser of Iranian petroleum. So they're basically trying to crack down on that in China via these bills. And the House, essentially, what's happening now is a couple things. One, Speaker Johnson is trying to assert himself on this foreign policy. And I think what he feels is A, the right thing to do. But also, I think he feels that there's a political opening because of how chaotic his conference is to put these bills forward. Separately, he is allowing people to vote yes or no on different issues. So there's a lot of people who are Republicans who I think will vote yes for Israel aid, no for Ukraine aid. But I think he's actually making a very good calculation, which is that this like pretty unthreatening push by Marjorie Taylor Greene to oust him again is not really gaining steam, because I think Republicans are really wary of causing chaos again when they're all trying to run for reelection. And so I think Johnson is basically seeing like an opening to try to pass this really important aid that I think most Republicans actually agree with, but there's a minority that's been stopping it. And he's saying like, I can get the Democratic votes, obviously. I can get enough Republican votes. And these efforts to try to like stir chaos are not going to be successful because everyone's a little bit nervous about reelection.
Also, what are you even thinking with where the world is today? I'd imagine having to go through this whole speaker thing. And we now have Iran being a bigger issue.
Well, apparently there's no one that would win. Like there's no one now that would win speaker. We would just have an interim speaker until the next Congress.
Two wars going on. Yeah.
How much do you think? So Anna's question is this.
I have a question that I was
How much do you think the recent Iranian attack on Israel is driving or going to push this aid package over the goal line?
The thing is, I think the Israel aid package always was going to pass.
But I don't know that Democrats were going to do that without doing Ukraine.
Oh, you think that like the way he's going to get Democrats on board with this is basically saying we have to vote this way because we need to get Israel aid as well.
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think that obviously was really scary. And like, thank God there was no casualties. You know, in this interview, Mike Lawler was essentially talking about like these Iranian sanctions being incredibly important to pass, which I think is a popular opinion. But yeah, I mean, that's a really good point. I just also think that, I don't know, I just think the Ukraine thing is more the thing.
Right.
Like that was the more uncertain element. And to give him a little bit of credit, he has figured out, I think it's going to pass, a way to navigate this. And what this tells me, which is so frustrating, is like these people know what the important things to get done are.
Right.
But to Anthony's earlier point, they just never want to do them because they want to get like the news hit, you know?
Yeah. It's like, is the next person going to be that great? Probably not.
No.
Let's work with what we have here.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
I have a last call before we end.
All right.
So my last call is everyone has to go see the movie Civil War in the theaters. Have you guys seen it?
Not yet, but it's on my top of my list.
It is so intense and so good and not at all what I thought it was going to be. And definitely, if you can, go see it in theaters, A, because it's important to see movies in theaters. B, this movie specifically, I think like the sound design, it being an action movie, much more of an action movie than I was expecting it to be, is so like, it's so tense. It ended and we were sitting there and we just like sat there for 10 minutes. Wow. We were like, whoa.
Really?
And it's not as political as you think it is.
I'm actually glad you said this, Anna, because I read an article today that actually said like this movie has become bipartisan.
Yeah.
Where a lot of people from both sides are praising it. I've seen like what
100%. Because it's not painting a party, a type of person or whatever as bad. It's showing the aftermath of the chaos that we are in the middle of creating and that everybody is to blame and everybody is innocent at the same time.
And follow-up question, Anna, when you and Billy go to the movie, do you guys share a popcorn? Do you
Never.
Do two separate with like different topping levels?
Billy likes butter. I don't like butter on it.
Got
also, Billy eats so fast that I don't allow us to share popcorn because then I don't get any.
Billy's really been ripped on this episode.
Amazing. All right, guys. Well, time for a refill.
Go see Civil War.
Cheers.
Adios.